Today marks an important anniversary in the history of filmmaking. On January 21st, 1903, a man named Edwin Porter received the copyright on his movie Life of an American Fireman. And later the same year, Porter's film The Great Train Robbery came out. Those two movies constitute a landmark, the beginning of film editing. Before 1903, there were plenty of examples of bits of film being spliced together, but Edwin Porter did it not just to make a longer reel of separate features, he did it in the cause of storytelling. The edit from one shot to another implied a sequence of events, or the simultaneity of two different events. Porter worked for Thomas Edison, and his approach soon became the standard for the early movie industry, influencing all the filmmakers who followed. Rick Altman, who teaches film and film history at the University of Iowa, says Porter's two 1903 movies came just in time. The turn-of-the-century film industry, he says, was in very poor health.
It was wheezing. There still were not any film theaters. It's important to remember that, with very few exceptions, almost all the film showing in the first decade took place in vaudeville theaters, in amusement parks that ran usually only a part of the year, or in a very few venues that would alternate between stage plays and the odd film. So this is a period when it took the exceptional success of A Great Train Robbery to turn a profession around.
Typically, what was it that was on display? What might one have seen in a theater that passed for motion picture at the very beginning of the 20th century?
The two most popular genres are as far apart as one can imagine. On the one hand, we have the passion plays. The passion play of Oberammergau in Bavaria. Of course, the Oberammergau peasants were pretty smart and had made it clear from the beginning that the real thing could not be photographed, whether still photographs or cinematography. And so the films that one might see around the turn of the century might have been shot in Bohemia. They might have been shot in Pennsylvania, or in one famous case, might have been shot on the roof of a New York building, still showing characters.
A whole genre of faux Oberammergau.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons that it was acceptable is that this was something that couldn't be shown on the stage in this country because it was not accepted for a flesh and blood person to show up in the personality of Jesus Christ. But it was thought to be okay as long as it was just shadows on a wall. Now, the irony is that the other most popular genre was boxing films. And again, in a way, because boxing was outlawed. There were many states where you could not hold a prize fight, but a fight that had taken place in another state could be photographed and shown on the screen.
But in both of these genres, the passion play, perhaps masquerading as being from Oberammergau, but shot somewhere else, or the boxing match, in either case, it would simply be a single shot by the camera straight ahead at the stage or the ring?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the things that's really interesting about The Great Train Robbery is the way in which it transforms this single shot aesthetic. There were many films before The Great Train Robbery that had multiple shots. In most cases, the way in which the shot would be handled is exactly as if it were a scene on stage. In fact, what we now call shots were called scenes at the time. You wouldn't stop the camera until everybody was out of the field of vision of the camera, just as you wouldn't consider that the scene was finished in the theater until everyone had exited the stage. One of the things that The Great Train Robbery does, and it certainly increases the suspense enormously and turns the film into something specifically cinematic, is that it stops in the middle of action in one shot in order to jump to another shot. For example, when we move from the robbery on the train, which has taken place, but thieves are still looking to get away, and all of a sudden, we find ourselves inside a music hall, and people are dancing. This is a crazy notion, which makes us want all the more to know what's happening on the train. this is not the kind of cutaway that had taken place in the past, and certainly the way in which Porter uses this intensification of suspense by moving to a new space and a new aspect of the same story is one of the things that makes the film quite special.
Given that these jumps from one scene to another represented a novel series of visual images. I mean, this isn't the way people see things naturally. I just wonder how you understand that people somehow instantly related to it and, I gather, accepted it at once and liked it.
Well, instantly is not clear. It's quite evident that early audiences had to do some learning. But one of the things that Porter and others discovered at this time was that audiences were not as dumb as they had been taken for earlier. They could learn, and they could learn very quickly. And once they've learned, filmmakers learn from that learning that they can take even more chances.
It must have been building off of Victorian novels. There could be short scenes that would cut away from, certainly throughout throughout the novel.
Yes.
Throughout Dickens, there are scenes that you hear here, and then suddenly you shift over there, and then shift over there. It was part of storytelling, just not in a visual medium.
The truth of the matter is that filmmakers almost never imitated novels at this period because there was a better version than the novel for them to imitate. There was a stage version of just about everything. Melodrama, for example, regularly would show multiple actions simultaneously. You had heroes climbing the side of a castle, and they just kept climbing and kept climbing and kept climbing and kept climbing because the backdrop was moving down while they were going up.
Mm-hmm.
It was not at all unusual for the stage to present this kind of simultaneous use of two spaces. And certainly cinema figured out how to use that, but at first it used it really very slavishly, and it's only through innovations like the innovation of the Great Train Robbery that we find filmmakers using shots as independent blocks rather than having to wait until the whole scene plays itself out before they're willing to move to another shot.
Well, Rick Altman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Been my pleasure.
Film historian Rick Altman. He teaches film and film history at the University of Iowa, and he talked to us about filmmaker Edwin Porter, who 100 years ago introduced film editing as a standard tool of the trade.